The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The airing of this program by this station is not an endorsement or recommendation by the station of the products or services discussed in the program. The station does not guarantee the results of any investments made by a listener to this program.
Josh Pick is the chief investment advisor with Aptus Wealth Management, a state-registered investment advisory firm. This program is sponsored by Aptus Wealth Management. Exposure to ideas and financial vehicles discussed should not be considered investment advice or recommendation to buy or sell financial vehicle. This information should not be considered tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult with professionals to see if any ideas expressed would fit their specific situation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Securities can fluctuate and when redeemed may be more or less than when originally invested.
Welcome to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. I'm Aaron Light, in today for Bruce Sully alongside of Josh Pick with Aptus Wealth Management. Welcome, Josh.
Good to be here.
And we're going to start off today's show with a little information about our normal host, Bruce Sully. Josh is going to fill us in on that.
Yeah, I'd like to talk a little bit about my good friend Bruce, and I know that this has been talked about on a couple other radio shows, but last week Bruce had a little bit of a health scare. Had to undergo some surgery. I'm not letting the cat out of the bag on this. He posted this on his Facebook page, and you're welcome to visit there. But, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the people reaching out to me and saying, how can I help the family? We are going to do something. We're not exactly sure what that looks like yet, whether that's some sort of crowdfunding like a GoFundMe page or maybe just donations to Bruce's church to try and help the family. You know, if you feel anything like I do, I want to help. I consider Bruce to be one of my very good friends. But, you know, if you've ever been through one of these types of things, you get a bunch of food in week one and then everybody kind of drifts away. I want to provide something for Bruce and his family that's a little bit more ongoing than that. Now, this by no means is me indicating that this isn't a positive outlook for Bruce whatsoever. But it's a serious enough scare that I think they're going to be dealing with some stuff over the next coming weeks and months. Another thing I want to talk about is, you know, and I can do this now that Bruce isn't here. It's me and you, because Bruce would be incredibly embarrassed by me telling you all of this stuff. But the one question that I get, Bruce has an incredibly loyal following of his show, and people have been very receptive to him on my show as well. The one question I always get is he the same off air as he is on the air? And I know that we've probably all encountered some people that are not. But I can tell you unequivocally that Bruce is who he is on the air. He is a man of deep faith. He is a man that refuses to compromise his morals and ethics. He's a good father. He's a good husband. He's just a darn good person. And if anything beyond that GoFundMe type scenario that we're going to come up with over the next couple of weeks, I'm sure he would be very thankful for prayers sent his way. So if you could do that, I would be appreciative as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Josh. And thank you for your concern and help. And we hope to have Bruce back here on the show as soon as possible. Just tuning in, I'm here with Josh Pick with Aptus Wealth Management. To find Josh, to find out about his story, go to aptuswealth.com. That's aptuswealth.com. Their offices are located right here in Columbus on the north side in Lewis Center, just off Route 750. And we're always excited to have him here and always excited to have you as a listener. Over the next hour, we're going to be discussing how you can find financial independence and retire. And also hopefully fill you in on some ideas that you may not have heard of when it comes to finances and some recent news. Like, for example, there was a recent Fed meeting. I have a question coming up for you on that, Josh. But for somebody that doesn't know, what even is a Fed meeting?
Yeah, so the Fed meets periodically throughout the year, 8 times typically. And the purpose of the Fed, well, they have multiple purposes to their charter. But the big purpose of the Fed is to kind of keep the wheels on the bus going round. And by that, I mean low interest rates, keep monetary policy, which sounds like funny, you know, fancy words for saying making sure that the economy stays strong. And the way that they can do that is by either interjecting money into the economy or adjusting interest rates, as they're kind of two predominant tools. So when they got together recently, they decided that they weren't going to raise interest rates. And that's a good sign, because when we raise interest rates, we're trying to tighten the amount of money that's available in the United States, which means we're trying to slow down inflation. So as we're staring down the barrel of inflation, we've dealt with it more in the last 2 years than we have in the last 40. When we're staring down that barrel, we want to bring that inflation down so we're not paying too much for eggs, milk, cars, houses. Them saying that we're not going to raise interest rates again means that at least to some capacity, they're comfortable with the level of inflation. Now, on one hand, they didn't raise the interest rate, but on the other hand, they said, we're not going to be scared to raise them again if we have to, which of course sent the market yesterday in a tailspin towards the end of trading. However, they also indicated that they have raised them enough that if necessary in future years, they have the ability to lower the interest rates again, which puts more money back into the economy, essentially, which will spark the economy. And that's really been the tool in the tool bag, is if things get bad, we can lower interest rates and kind of give it a little nudge, a little shot of steroids. And if things get bad in the other direction from inflation, we can then raise interest rates. The problem that we had is we had really high inflation and really low interest rates. So the only way to go was up. So simultaneously last year, we had an economy that was struggling and we still had to raise interest rates, which you could say was just putting the foot on the accelerator of bad. So what the future looks like, I don't know. But I think, you know, how does that direct your decisions on purchasing things and investing is obviously the question that we probably have.
Mm-hmm. Now, who is on this board? Are these elected officials? How is it decided who is making these decisions for all of us?
Yeah, good question. So Jerome Powell is the head of the board right now. It is a appointed position, and people tend to stay there for not too long. You know, you could argue why that is. If we were putting on our tinfoil hats, I will tell you a little fun fact about being, you know, the Treasury Secretary or somebody in the Fed. You're required to sell your stock positions because obviously you can impact the economy. So let's just say somebody like maybe Jamie Dimon, who's the CEO of our very own hometown, J.P. Morgan Chase. But Jamie Dimon, last time I checked, has about $1.2 or $1.3 billion worth of J.P. Morgan stock. Well, because they make the Treasury Secretary or people that go to the Fed sell all their positions, they also give them exoneration from paying taxes on that sale. So you'll see a lot of times people who are really at the pinnacle of their field in respective banking industries will step down from that to take a very much lower paying job to help spark the economy and handle all those things, which they're certainly equipped to do. But we oftentimes wonder how long they'll stay in that tenure and whether or not it's for the right reasons. Right. But it is an appointed position.
So at the last meeting, they discussed how they may be done raising interest rates. Is that something that you believe? Do you think they're going to do that? Where do you see this going in the future?
Yeah, well, the hope is that we can be done. And the reason for that hope is because we really don't want to put any more downward pressure on our economy. Because I think there's two economies, if you will. There's the status of the stock market, which is one economy, which is great. But let's say you're not invested in the stock market and you're not doing, you're just worried about putting food on the table. Well, let's call that Main Street versus Wall Street. And for Main Street, having inflation at low levels and an economy where the money supply is not tight is good, because that's how you're buying your food, your cars, your houses. So, you know, if they do pause the raise, that would be a good signaling. Actually having the ability to drop it would be even better. However, I am cautiously optimistic that, you know, the $5-6 trillion worth of spending that we've done throughout the COVID years and now moving into helping out in Ukraine, et cetera. Has the bullet already left the barrel? And do we have to really struggle to rein that in? Now, it appears that the rate hikes have done a great job. So I'm hopefully optimistic that we will not have to continue to raise rates. And that's a good thing.
Hmm. We're here with Josh Pick, financial expert at Aptus Wealth Management. You can visit the website at aptuswealth.com. You can give them a call at 614-917-1040. That's 614-917-1040. They're right here in Central Ohio. If you're not able to make it to their offices in Lewis Center, just off Route 750, they're also happy to meet with you remotely, and they can answer any of your questions. So let's get real, down to the real average person out there. Moving forward, what would continuing raising interest rates do? What would the stoppage of interest rates doing, in your opinion, in the average person's life?
Yeah, so let's think about their investing life, because that's obviously what the show is about, is what do I do with my money to have my money? You know, so I was talking to somebody today, and they said, you know, I've worked hard for my money. I'd like to have my money work hard for me. So how can we make our money work hard for us? Well, when interest rates are high, that has an impact, whether you want to believe it or not, on different types of investments. For example, when we raise interest rates, historically speaking at least, that has created downward pressure on stock prices. So investing in the stock market becomes a much more difficult game. When rates are rising, it has an inverse effect on bond prices. So buying bonds can be a very difficult time. And we saw that last year where the stock market went down, and we usually run from stocks into bonds to save ourselves. But it did not work last year because the bond market was down 13%. So you were kind of like, well, I'm jumping out of the fire right into the frying pan. I don't like either one of these scenarios. But what did it improve? Well, we've seen savings rates at banks go from point nothing to all the way up to where you can get money market accounts over 5%. So that's been a great increase. So I've said before, and I'll say again, if you're not getting at least 4% interest on your savings accounts, you should be. Do a little bit more legwork, a little bit more looking, and it shouldn't be hard to find. But there's another kind of hidden gem in here from investing that we haven't really encountered for about 40 years or so. And that is this concept of creating your own private pension. And if you think about a pension at its core, which everybody would love to have, but unfortunately, less than 10% of us have them at this point because they've kind of gone by the wayside. Pensions are based upon two things: how long an insurance company thinks you're going to live, and what kind of interest rate they can get on the money that you give them. So as interest rates went up, the payouts on these private pensions, and by private, I mean not the one through your company, you can create it yourself, have gone through the roof. And we're seeing people with the ability who have this huge fear of, well, what if I live too long? I don't want to outlive my money. I don't trust the stock market. I don't know what's going to happen here. All the terrible things that you hear. How can I create a predictable income stream that's not foolish where I'm locking my money in at 1%? You can do that today. So these rising interest rate environments, we don't know whether they're going to continue to rise them or if they're going to maybe start to drop them. It's kind of a mixed bag. But what we do know is, darn if they're not the highest they've been in the last 20 or 30 years. So maybe now is a good time to take some of your money that's had the longest bull run in history, just ended in 2022. We've had a huge run up in the stock market. It's now a time to lock some of that in to provide guaranteed income for us. That would be a great opportunity and a great time to do it.
So if someone just has a basic bank account, mm-hmm. you would say a nice next level up would be a private pension, something that's not extremely risky, but something that's a little bit a better investment than a bank account.
Yeah. You know, I think there's different tiers to investing. You have that emergency fund. That's step one. That's what we should all work towards, particularly when we're young. Step two would be, if you have a family, you want to make sure you have enough insurance that you protect your greatest asset, which is you. If something happens to you, your family's going to need additional money. And then step three, you start thinking about, well, I might not be able to work for the rest of my life. So what will I do when I stop working? And there's two ways that we can handle that. In the olden days, it was, my company provides a pension for me. And then on top of that pension, maybe I buy some stocks, or I buy some CDs, or I buy something to supplement that. Well, those tables have been turned dramatically over the last 20 or 30 years, where now nobody has a pension and everybody puts all their money in the stock market through their 401k or 403b or TSP or insert alphabet soup, right? Mm-hmm. All I'm suggesting is, maybe what we've done is taken what used to be a three-legged stool. We used to have Social Security, a pension, and then some savings, and we've turned it into a two-legged stool, which I don't recommend you try and sit on, because you will find yourself on your butt. So maybe we should use the current environment, which is very advantageous for that third leg of the stool, which is the old pension, and maybe start to diversify amongst our 401k with something that looks more like a pension, but one that we control, so we don't have to worry about our company ripping it away from us.
So the private pension is a long-term strategy.
Absolutely. It's either a long-term strategy or it's a short-term strategy, depending upon where you are in your life. So, for example, there's ways you can set this up. Let's say I'm 45 years old and I want to make sure that come retirement time, I have at least $1,000, $2,000 a month supplementing my Social Security. Okay, fine. We can predictably now say this is exactly the amount you have to save every month. Not probably the amount, but exactly the amount to get to exactly that amount. The other option would be, well, I'm 65 years old and I'm thinking about retiring and I have $1 million in my 401k. but I don't really want to just start taking withdrawals out of it because who knows what that 401k is going to do. So is there a way I could shelf maybe $200,000 or $300,000 of that to predictably generate income? And then I'll roll the dice with the other 700, roll the dice, probably being a little dramatic metaphor for that. But that's sometimes the way we feel. So yes, you can do that as well.
What about something like buying a house? Something that, you know, maybe it's not long term. Maybe you're looking to do that the next 10 years. When it comes to investing strategy, what about that?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's two. Let's set the stage for housing right now. I don't think housing prices and the rise in housing prices have gotten near the due that they should and how difficult it is for a first time home buyer today. And I hear oftentimes, you know, baby boomers saying, well, when I was young and, you know, interest rates were 18% and blah, blah, blah. That's true. But there's three mechanics that go into buying a house: what the house costs, what the interest rate is, and then how much you're making, right? And I can tell you definitively that if you look at the inflation rate of incomes versus the inflation rate of houses versus the payment due to the interest rate, affordability is far less today than it was in 1980. That's just a fact. So buying a house today is very, very difficult. So I'm getting these questions all the time of, well, should I wait until interest rates come down? Is the housing market going to burst? I don't know what's going to happen. And my response to that is always the same. Nobody knows. Nobody has any idea. But I can tell you this. You rent the rate, you buy the house. And if you believe in this common logic that if rates go down, houses will become more affordable. Well, simultaneously, as rates go down, housing prices could go up, so it's a wash. So you're paying more for the house, but your payment's the same because interest rates are lower. I would much rather buy the house that I want and refinance the rate as rates come down, or have a locked-in rate if I'm wrong and rates continue to go up. I don't think that's the question you were asking, though. I think the question you were asking is, how do I save towards the down payment on that house? And fortunately, and you know, 10 years ago, the answer would have been put it in a savings account for the next 5 years and earn jack squat because then savings accounts weren't paying anything. Today, you can get 5% on your money, so you can get there a little bit faster. Now, the problem is you're earning 5, but inflation, is it more or less than 5, is the big argument. So I'm not trying to make this sound easier than it is. It's going to be a difficult tussle. But if you sit around on your hands waiting for things to get better, that isn't always the case.
Mm-hmm. If someone is unsure about their personal situation, contacting you, is this a subject that you would be willing to look at their personal situation and assess what's going on and give some advice?
Yeah, that's a great question. And let me kind of first off tell you that I have a scenario right now after we, you know, after I get out of here today, I have to go call a client who's in this exact predicament. They're looking at a house. They were in a different state. They moved back here and they picked just by happenstance the worst possible time, right? So here we are. We moved before COVID and sold our house before COVID, moved to a rental place in another state during COVID, watched home prices shoot through the roof, decided it wasn't the right state for us, moved back, and now our same house is 50% more than what it was when we left. And now we have a challenge. How do we purchase that? So we're definitely going through, how do we solve that problem? But I will tell you that our average client, you know, 97% of our clients are over the age of 55. Most of our clients have a substantial net worth. Well, why is that? Is it because I'm against helping people that only have $1,000? Of course not. We'll absolutely help those folks. However, you have to pay me for my help. That's just the way that this works. I wish it wasn't the case and we all didn't have to get paid. But of course, you're going to pay me for my work. And I think there's a certain level where that juice is worth the squeeze, where it makes sense to pay me. If you have $1,000 and you're looking for a savings account, why would you pay me? I'll tell you where to go. Go do it. And then as you get higher and higher, you can pay me. And why is that the case? Because if you have $1 million in an investment account right now and you're nearing retirement, we have control over several things. We have control over when you take the money, how you pay the taxes, where you invest the money, how we leverage that money to buy things like your house, how are we going to pass this money to the kids? We have issues of required minimum distributions, which could affect how much tax we have to pay. How do we circumvent that problem? There's all these problems that have solutions. When you're 25 years old and you're trying to save $500 a month, you don't have a lot of problems. You just need to be disciplined. So we will always point people in the right direction. We will always give good advice. But unfortunately, not for everybody, that means that you're going to become a client, not because we're trying to turn you away. It just doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It does make sense. When it comes to if someone who's willing to contact you for a consultation, what requirements do they need to do that?
Yeah, so I think we don't know what your situation is, and we don't know if we can help. So I think just know this, that we're only going to offer help if we can actually help. We're not in the business of just trying to take people's money. I would suggest if you have any of the concerns that we talk about on the show, you should call. If you call, we'll set up initially just a 10 or 15 minute kind of initial get a lay of the land type conversation where we're not going to ask you to, you know, come to the office and bring all your stuff with you. Just a general conversation. And through that conversation, we'll get a pretty good handle on, are we a good fit and are you a good fit for us? And if you're not in that 10 or 15 minutes, I will point you in directions that will undoubtedly improve your situation. I promise I'll make it worth your while. However, if you are a good fit, the next step of that process is you come in. What are expectations coming in? Bring in everything that you have questions or concerns about that surround your financial life. So everything from life insurance policies to tax returns to investment statements, et cetera. Have at least put a little bit of thought into what are my goals? Now, we will help you hone in what that really means. And oftentimes, for example, Aaron, we'll have people come in and say, well, here's my budget, and this is how much I want to live on. And they have it honed down to the last nickel. They've never lived their life like that in their entire life, but all of a sudden when they retire, they're going to live right down to the nickel. Mm-hmm. So it's my job to say, appreciate it, really analytical and cool, but not practical. So let's kind of hone this strategy down into something more logical. And then from there, we'll analyze your situation, come up with what we end up calling a blueprint. And that blueprint is absolutely an actionable plan that you can take and implement how you choose. But at that point, we will see, is this a good fit for us long term for you to become a client? So if you're waiting for, I always tell people this in the first meeting, if you're coming in waiting for that bait and switch or the other shoe to drop, you're just going to be waiting in perpetuity because it never comes. If it's a good fit, great. If not, that's fine too. We really appreciate you taking the time to learn more about your financial life.
Yeah. If you would like to contact Josh, please do. As you can hear, he's willing to be very honest with you. He's here local in Columbus. He's been doing this for over 20 years. And he's willing to offer you a free no obligation consultation. That's 614-917-1040. It's the Aptus Retirement Group at aptuswealth.com. Aptus is spelled A-P-T-U-S. That's aptuswealth.com. And they are located, as I said, right here in Central Ohio in Lewis Center, just off Route 750. You can find all the information there. We have a couple minutes left here in this segment. What can listeners look forward to coming up here in the second half?
Yeah, I think a couple of questions that we can talk about is, I get this one a lot. How much money do I need to retire? And I think we get absorbed in this idea, and I've talked about this before, but I think it bears discussing again because we get so caught up in how much money do I have? What's my net worth? How many do I need? $500,000, $1 million, or $27 million to retire comfortably? And while ultimately we can come up with what that number is based upon how much money we're going to need for the rest of our life, we don't live our life based upon our net worth. At no point have I ever called my mortgage company or my insurance company and said, well, you don't have to worry about the payment because my net worth is $1.7 million. That's irrelevant. Cash is king. Cash flow is king. So I think it's important to talk about some different strategies that develop a predictable cash flow, much like the pension that we talked about. But how do we kind of ladder all those things together and do it in the most tax efficient manner possible? Because it's not just how much cash flow do you have, but how much of it do I actually get to keep and how much of it has to go to Uncle Sam? So I think we'll talk about that. We'll talk about a little bit more about that three-legged stool type idea and then just kind of expand upon all these historical perspectives on what to do.
Okay, that's Josh Pick with Aptus Wealth Management. This is the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. You can contact Josh for a free, no-obligation consultation. Again, it's 614-917-1040. That's 614-917-1040 or online at aptuswealth.com. That's APTUS wealth.com. We'll be back with more Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show coming up right after this. Welcome back to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. I am Aaron Light, sitting in today for host Bruce Hooley, alongside of Josh Pick with Aptus Wealth Management. Find Josh online at aptuswealth.com. That's Aptus, A-P-T-U-S, wealth.com. Well, if you were listening before the break, we were talking about things like the three legs of the stools of investments and how much money you need to retire. We're going to continue on to that. Josh, what a broad question, but how do you even find out how much money you need to retire?
Yeah, you know, I think we talk about financial planning and the concept of having a financial plan, and sometimes we like to try and pinpoint that into what is the one thing, right? And that's the kind of society we are, where, you know, what's the one thing I can do to lose weight? What's the one thing I can do to be a good father? What's the one thing I can do to be a good husband? What's the one thing I can do to be good financially? And I wish it was as easy as that. It's not. So I think the real question is, what is the appropriate way to design a financial plan? Whether that financial plan is trying to get my kids to college, or my financial plan is trying to get me retired, or whatever your financial plan is. And, you know, the next logical question before we get into that would be, why do I even need one? You know, financial plans are only for wealthy people, or financial plans are only for this or for that. Well, there was a study done by, I believe it was done by Dave Ramsey's group out of Tennessee, which was the largest research, to my knowledge, on millionaires. And how did people become millionaires? And the data that spit out from that, it was quite shocking for most, in that the top 10% of net worth individuals in the United States are not necessarily the top 10% of wage earners in the United States. As a matter of fact, quite to the contrary. And the lion's share, and by lion's share, I mean greater than 90% of millionaires in the United States, did not inherit anything. They worked for their money. They were prudent in their investments, disciplined in their approach. They had a plan. They rinsed and repeated, and they ended up with quite a nest egg, quite a net worth. So, you know, a financial plan does not apply to only the elite, only the wealthy. It applies to everybody. It's just to different capacities. So how do we build we'll just use retirement financial plan? Well, we know how much we're living on today. We know what our expenses are today. And we probably have a pretty good idea as to what of those expenses will go away when we're retired. So, for example, if you plan on living in the same house for the rest of your life, and you only have 7 years left on your mortgage, but you're not going to retire for 10 years, I think rest assured, you don't have to worry about a mortgage payment when you retire. So it's easy to say, this is what I'm bringing home every 2 weeks after I pay my taxes and after I pay everything. That's what I'm actually living on. And I adjust for, okay, when I retire, I want to travel more, so I add money in, and the mortgage is gone, so I can subtract money out, and you come up with a definitive figure. Now, probably have to take into account inflation. So you say, well, what's a historical, logical path for inflation? Well, you can look through history and figure that out. And then you come up with what are you comfortable with? Because this is your plan. It's not my plan. It's my job to guide you and give you historical perspective. For example, we use 3.5% as the inflation rate, which many people would say high, but I would rather be high and pleasantly surprised than low and worry about how am I going to pay for my bills when I'm 88 years old. So you come up with all these kind of historical data points, and then you project forward and you say, what are the tax rates going to look like? How much money in taxes I'm going to pay? And you start to formulate this plan of what is the actual number that I need to have and what will that be comprised of to generate the income that I need, which I'm sure is going to bring up a whole bunch of questions about, okay, great, we have all these different tools. What are the good tools to use and in what concert do we have to go through?
Mm-hmm. When you're moving forward and thinking about how much money you're going to need to retire, is there something that stands out to you that you've heard from multiple people, or what's something that people underestimate when they're thinking about, you know, is a Big Mac going to be $20 in the year 2050? I don't know, but what are some of the things that you can think about moving forward?
Yeah, I think there's two common mistakes. One is that all money is created equal. meaning I have $1 million in an IRA versus I have $1 million in my savings account versus I have $1 million in my Roth IRA. Those are all drastically different amounts of money. For example, if you think you're worth $1 million because you have $1 million in your 401k, go cash it out. Tell me how much money you have after you pay the government. It's not $1 million. It depends on how you structure taking that money out, because if you take it out in lump sum, you're going to pay more taxes than if you trickle it out over time. So not all money is created equal. That's number one. I think number two is that life is linear. And it's not, meaning that every year of my life, if I plan on I'm going to need $5,000 a month, that means that I can adjust for inflation at 3%, and I'm just going to need exactly 3% every single year for the rest of my life, and everything's going to be perfect, and nothing's going to go wrong, and I can no longer have to worry about an emergency fund or health scares or issues with the kids or whatever it might be. Life is not linear. So you cannot predict your plan based upon linear numbers. Now, they're a tool for sure. But you need to figure out some sort of buffer, some sort of, oh, no, didn't see that one coming type approach as well. And in our office, we call that stress testing, which it kind of makes sense. If you just think about if you were learning how to fly a plane, you'd go, I get in the flight simulator and everything's good. When the instructor's next to me, everything's good. Well, what do? Well, if you're in a simulator, they start messing with the plane a lot. You know, they knock out a wing or an engine. They start to mess with your switches go out, right? Which is why there's a lot of redundancy in planes. Well, if you're up with a pilot and they're teaching you, they're probably going to make you put yourself in really terrible situations so you know that you're okay. Well, similarly with a financial plan, we're going to look at this in a wind tunnel of beauty and awesomeness, and everything's perfect and nothing is challenged. But then we'll start doing all sorts of what seemingly sounds like terrible things, like, you know, what if I killed your spouse? How does that affect the financial plan? What if you had a health scare and, you know, you had to pay your annual deductible plus you had some experimental treatment? What would that do? What if we're planning on inflation being 3%, but what if it's actually 5%? What if cars go crazy? What if? And you can what if yourself to death. Now, our goal is not to prove that we can crash the plane in the simulator. I can do that for sure. If I knock out both your engines, take out both your wings, no problem. But how realistic is that? It's not realistic. Well, similarly with investing, okay, I can take inflation to 37% and I can make your investments earn negative 10 and I can make you run out of money, but that's not realistic. So let's put a reasonable amount of stress on the plan to make sure you still make it.
Mm-hmm. That's Josh Peck. If you would like information and advice on your personal situation and to start a plan moving forward, contact Josh, Aptus Wealth Management, aptuswealth.com. You can call for a free obligation. No obligation consultation, 614-917-1040. That's 614-917-1040. And Aptus Wealth Management is located right here in Columbus. They can help you out in office or remotely if you live outside of the area. So talked about some of the things that we need to be looking out for moving forward, but how do we get there? What vehicles do we use to reach financial freedom? Anything specific you recommend there, or is it best to use a variety of options in case one of those engines fail?
Yeah, I mean, the variety is always best. It's the old time, true tested diversification. But I think diversification is kind of getting a little bit misused here as of late, where diversification means I just own a bunch of stocks. Well, that's diversifying amongst stocks. That's good, because if we have an Enron situation where one of them goes belly up, then obviously we didn't have all our eggs in one basket, and that's tremendous. But there's other levels of diversification. For example, maybe I want to have some bonds. Maybe I need some money in a savings account. Real estate doesn't sound like a bad idea. How about gold? How about all these different things? So let's kind of talk, historically speaking, about what has been a good investment versus a bad investment over time and what the pros and cons of those are. Because we're hearing a lot, and we hear this every time there's any sort of economic uncertainty, which there certainly is today. You'll see everybody coming out of the woodwork with, buy gold or watch all of your money evaporate. And this is not a new thing. This happens every decade, it seems, every day of every decade. And depending upon what you're reading, you will see more of them, right? Advertisers aren't stupid. Here I am working at a radio station. I'm sure you guys don't direct your efforts for advertising to foolish things. So if you're watching a bunch of stuff on YouTube that says, is the end of the world coming? I bet the advertisements are going to be buy gold and food storage and don't forget to buy bullets, mm-hmm. right? If you watch, if you Google why is everything going to be awesome, they're going to give you, well, buy this new, you know, travel bag because you're going to go around the world seven times. So is gold a good investment? And are some of these things good ideas? So by kind of priority starting at zero being the worst investment for interest, right? Not necessarily meaning it's not necessary, but for interest has been cash. Cash has been the single worst thing that you can invest in for the long run over the last 7,500 years because it has not kept up with inflation. It's just simply cash. After that, you have all the money market type instruments, and then you move into gold. Gold has only been second essentially to cash as the worst single investment over the last 75 or 100 years. And if you're listening to this going, well, yeah, but gold over the last 6 months has looked pretty good. Not disagreeing. There are short periods of time where gold is a very good safe haven to run away from volatility or run away from you know, the markets and the economy doing poorly. But in the long run, not a great place. Next in line would be kind of bonds. Bonds have been a reasonable place to keep your money. And remember, bonds are just simply IOUs from a company or from the government saying, we'll pay you back. And they pay you interest and then pay you back the principal that you loaned them. And then you move up into things like land and stocks and oil and gas partnerships, et cetera. The leader of the pack, with the exception of land due to the recent expansion of land prices because of COVID, and we've seen what that's done with real estate prices, and land is no different. Stocks have been the single best investment over the long run that you could put your money into as a category. So, you know, how do I take this information and employ it? Well, there's two ways that you can invest. Way number one would be buy and hold. And there's a lot of proponents of this. This is the Vanguard strategy. If you look at someone like Jeremy Siegel, who's on CNBC all the time, who's a, one of the chief economists out of, I believe he's out of the Wharton School of Business. If you look at people like that, they will say markets are efficient. Buy the S&P 500, which is just the biggest 500 stocks in the United States. Keep buying it. Don't care whether it's up. Don't care whether it's down. Rinse, repeat, go, go, go. Warren Buffett would be a proponent of this approach. The downside of that is there's contradictory information out there in research that says that's true. The markets are efficient and you will do well over time. What we've learned is that people don't react well to downtimes. They can tell you a million times that they're going to put the blinders on, never look at the stock market until it goes down by 20% and they see their 401k go to a 301k and they pull all their money out and they put in cash. And then when the market goes back up, they go, oh, I better get back in the market because I have a fear of missing out on all these great gains. And they usually are late. And then by the time they go back in and feel comfortable, it's about ready for the next correction. And what we find is that there's this ideology called the behavioral finance gap or the financial behavioral gap, which shows what the market does in a time period and what the average investor actually returns. And usually, if you look throughout time, it's about half. We as investors usually only net out about half of what the market does, not because of fees, not because of managerial issues, but because of our own emotional roller coaster in our actions. So knowing that, there's another approach to investing. And that other approach is active management. Now, can active management outperform the buy and hold strategy? Yes. Do very few managers actually achieve that? Also a yes. So many managers achieve less than the overall efficient market. However, what active management has the ability to do is minimize what your roller coaster ride's bumps look like. And I assure you, as I've worked with people getting close and in retirement for 20 plus years, the closer we get to retirement is very akin to the same way we feel about roller coasters. When we're young, we love them. As we get older, I don't know about you, I'm 45 years old. I try and ride roller coasters with my kids, but when they turn into like the corkscrew ones, I'm just not, that's not my game anymore. Mm-hmm. Right? I don't enjoy it. Well, similarly, when you get closer and closer to retirement, you like the wooden coasters more than you like the warp speed, insert terrible name that my kids want to ride. You know, the death become of you roller coaster. My kids can't get there fast enough. I have no desire to go on that anymore. And people who are closer and closer to retirement don't have a desire either. So we have to come up with some sort of strategy to diversify amongst different asset classes that don't react the same, not remain stagnant in our approach, so that when the train is coming down the tracks of volatility, we have the ability to sidestep that so we can control our emotions.
Mm-hmm. And is active management what you call what you do at Aptus Wealth Management?
Yeah, our approach to money management is certainly active. That doesn't mean that we don't take some passive strategies as well, but overall, our strategy is definitely active. We believe in purpose-driven investing, which means money should have a purpose, unless you're just trying to build up this huge pot of money so you can brag to your friends. The reason that you've saved all this money is for at some point you to do something with it. So the way that we pick investments is based upon what is the purpose of the money. Once we know that, that drives everything else. But we are active at its core, not only just in the asset management, but also in tax planning, also in estate planning, also in all the things that affect your financial life. Because it's not just return. It's what does that return do for you, and how much of it do you get to keep?
Interesting. And that's something I necessarily wouldn't have thought about, that there are different levels of this money is going to be for my children to give to their children, or this money is going to be so that I can move to the Carolinas and play golf for the next 20 years.
Absolutely. And everybody's different. You know, people, I hear this all the time when people come and they say, well, is this greedy? Insert conversation. Or am I wrong in saying, no, it's your life. It's your, you know, I have plenty of folks that want to make sure that their kids inherit $1 million apiece because that's just something they, okay, fine, let's work on getting you there. And I have other people that say, well, I help put my kids through school. Quite frankly, they're doing better than I ever did. Mm-hmm. So I tell them that I'm going to hope to God that my last check that I write bounces to the undertaker and I'm going to have as much fun as I can. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'm not sure that we can hammer that one dead on, you know, down the fairway, but we'll do our best.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that kind of personal touch as far as looking at someone's situation because, like you said, everyone's vastly different. If you would like to discuss with Josh about your financial future, if you're trying to reach financial independence in life, if you have that goal that you're trying to reach down the road or even afterlife with your money, Josh can help you with that. And Aptus Wealth Management, aptuswealth.com is where you can sign up for a free no-obligation consultation. If you'd prefer to call 614-917-1040, that's 614-917-1040. So we talked a little bit about how much money do you need to retire, how do you get there, but what about the building blocks? What are the steps? I know you've mentioned that you are doing an assessment at the beginning to see where the starting point is. What are those building blocks? What's the base? And then what's some of the things that are more of an add-on to that base?
Sure. Fortunately for us, we don't deal with a lot of folks that are just starting out, but I will cover what they should do. So starting out.
And
As soon as possible, right? So let's assume you graduated high school, graduated college, you get your first job. You should already, regardless of the amount of money that you're making, and people say, well, I'm not making enough money to save. I don't care if you're saving 10 bucks a month. You should be saving something, and the purpose of that saving in the beginning should be the war chest, the uh-oh, didn't see that coming. I got laid off. The car broke down. My landlord raised the rent. Whatever it might be, you want to have that kind of emergency fund war chest backed up. How much should I have? Somewhere in that 3 to 6 month window, but obviously that's dependent upon what kind of job you have. If you work for the federal government and shy of getting caught doing something horrendous, your job security is pretty strong, then 3 months is probably good. If you're, you know, an independent business owner and you never know what the next day holds, well, maybe 12 months is a better idea. But once you get that established, then you start working towards those longer term goals, whether that's saving for a house or helping your kids through college or the place in North Carolina so you can play golf for the rest of your life, retirement, et cetera. But I think no matter what you're doing in those longer-term goals, you have choices of investments. And, you know, I'm not new in this concept, but I'm sure if you went to to Barnes & Noble right now and you walked around and you went to the financial section, there would be about 485 books in there that says multiple streams of income, make sure you receive passive income, something to that effect. And that's where this kind of three-legged stool approach comes in, is I want to have more than one source to rely on for my income. Now, for most people, a couple of those are already set. I'm going to have Social Security. If you believe you're not going to get Social Security, I disagree. I think it'd be political suicide. Social Security will remain there. Will it remain in the same capacity? That's up for debate. but it'll certainly still be there. So if you're retiring anytime soon, don't fret. I think that you're just fine. And then secondarily, okay, well, I got a pension. Well, good for you, because only about 1 out of 10 people have one. But that would be another source of income. Maybe you have some rental properties. Cool. I got another source of income. Maybe you don't. And then we have 401ks, IRAs, brokerage accounts, et cetera. That's another source of income. The more sources of income that you have that are uncorrelated to one another, the better. And by uncorrelated, I mean, if you have all of your money in the housing market, we've seen what can happen there. So there's a million people running around talking about the only way to be wealthy is buy real estate. I'm not suggesting that real estate does not have some tremendous tax advantages. You get to use leverage. There's all sorts of benefits to investing in real estate and rental real estate. However, I can also think of at least a handful of people off the top of my head whom I know that back during the early 2000s bought 10, 15, 20 rental properties, highly leveraged. Then 08, 09 hit. People weren't paying their rents and they didn't have enough cash flow to satisfy the mortgage. And all of a sudden they're getting them all repoed. And now not only did they lose their investments, but their credit sucks. So that can have some issues as well. Well, during that time, how would I have offset that? Well, if you had a really big emergency fund, you would have been fine. Well, what are some other ways? Well, bonds did really, really well during that time period. Well, what else did well? Gold did really, really well during that time period. So there were avenues that you could have pursued to offset some of that liability. Now, you don't want to offset it so much that, okay, well, if this one goes up 10, this one goes down 10, because then I'm just swimming in glue going nowhere. But you want to have some sort of reasonable balance that you're protected against loss. And that's the purposes of diversification. And again, what we see is not that. What we see is diversification amongst, well, I own Coca-Cola and Pepsi stocks, so I'm diversified. You're not diversified. You just own two stocks in the same industry. That all tides will rise and fall, and so will your ship in that environment. So you want to make sure you have some level of diversification amongst different asset classes as well.
You mentioned a lot of different investment vehicles there. Is there anything right now that you do not recommend? Is there anything you're seeing out there that's it's too volatile? The future doesn't seem anywhere near what you think it is now, or you think it's all hype? Is there anything that you're advising against right now, or does everything have a place in moderation?
Yeah, everything has a place, not necessarily in moderation, but according to its purpose. So, for example, you know, AI is huge in the news lines right now, and companies like NVIDIA and Microsoft and Facebook are very involved in these types of investments. And you know, the top 10 stocks in the S&P 500 have driven 100% of the gain right now. And almost all those stocks are tied in some way to that. You know, you're talking Google, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, you know, all the big ones, right? Now, if you look at NVIDIA and how much it's up and the price to earnings ratio on it, it looks incredibly risky. I'm not suggesting it doesn't have a great track record. It's not going to have a great track record moving forward. But I think volatility is going to be quite significant with it. So if you're saving money for the next 6 months, probably not a good choice for you. If you're saving money for 20 years from now, well, then it might be.
That's Josh Pick with Aptus Wealth Management right here in Columbus. If you need advice on your financial future or your current situation, reach out to Josh online at aptuswealth.com. That's aptuswealth.com. I'm Aaron Light, wrapping up today's show. We hope to have host Bruce Hooley back soon. But we'll talk to you next week. This is the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show, right here on 98.9 FM, The Answer.
Airing of this program by this station is not an endorsement or recommendation by the station of the products or services discussed in the program. The station does not guarantee the results of any investments made by a listener to this program.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.